Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Subcapacity Licensing Announcement Training for IBM Sales Reps Conference. Today's conference is being recorded, and now at this time for opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlos Belak. Mr. Belak, please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome to everyone on the call. It's Carlos Belak from Distributed Pricing Strategy. I'm joined today with a number of other colleagues who will be available for the Q&A session of this presentation, which will start in about 30 to 40 minutes after we get through the charts. For the charts, you should be able to get to the charts by clicking, if you have the calendar invite open, down in the details section on the second link there that takes you to the Excel homepage, the subcapacity licensing page on the Excel homepage. And from there, if you click on that third enablement link that you'll see right in front of you there, you can get to the charts. Now, if you don't have the calendar invite in front of you, if you start from the Excel homepage and select from the drop-down menu on the right-hand nav bar the Passport Advantage item that's available under the Key Tools and Resources section from that right-hand nav bar, and then select Go, you'll be taken to the Passport Advantage page, and from there, go to the right-hand nav bar again and select the fourth choice under General Program Information. It's labeled Subcapacity Licensing and Passport Advantage. That'll take you to the internal Excel Subcapacity Licensing page, same place that you'll get to if you click on the calendar invite. And then from that page, the Excel Subcapacity Licensing page, the internal page, select the first link under the section labeled IBM Internal Only. That first link is labeled IBM Sales Training Virtualization Capacity Licensing, again on the right-hand nav bar under the IBM Internal Only section of that page. All right, so assuming you have the charts open, before we start on the charts, let me just tell you why I think this presentation is important for you to understand. I mean, the first key point is that virtualization market is growing, according to IDC, by 27% per year, or expected to grow by 27% per year through 2011. And most of our customers are either using some form of virtualization today, or they're asking questions about virtualization. Right, so this is becoming a bigger and bigger deal. And this presentation is designed to give you an overview of virtualization capacity licensing to give you that, to arm you with that information. So let's go to page two. The first note I want to make here is that because the term virtualization is becoming commonplace in the marketplace, we're in the process of renaming this offering from what is currently the subcapacity licensing offering for distributed Passport Advantage software to replacing the word subcapacity with virtualization capacity. So for the rest of this presentation, for the most part, I'll be using the words virtualization capacity, but we're going to be using the words virtualization capacity and subcapacity licensing interchangeably for a period of time. With that, let's go to the agenda page, page three. And again, the objective of the presentation is to give you an overview of virtualization capacity licensing, as well as communicate the changes to the offering that we announced on July 1st. And to do that, first I'll talk through some technology and competitive landscape background. Then we'll get into virtualization capacity licensing examples and what is virtualization capacity licensing at a high level. I'll talk through some of the licensing requirements, including the use of the IBM license metric tool, and then we'll close with what is the value of the virtualization capacity offering and next steps. Let's go to page four. three key points on this page at the top. The first point is that PVUs and virtualization capacity represent a significant portion of our distributed portfolio, more than half the revenue flows on PVU part numbers. And of that, most of the revenue is flowing either on the Intel slash AMD x86 based servers or IBM Power Systems servers. If you're thinking about Intel and AMD, and we'll be talking a lot about Intel and AMD hard technology in this presentation, most of those servers, a full 70%, are servers that have two sockets, and we'll talk about what that means as we go through here. But they're fairly small servers. They have two sockets on them. From a processor market perspective, there's really two things here. Everyone, I think, is well aware that, you know, we have multi-core processors that sort of dominate the marketplace today. And what we're seeing with multi-core processors from Intel, which is obviously the elephant in terms of volumes, is that not only are the number of cores per socket or number of cores per chip beginning to double every couple of years, but they're continuing to improve or increase the performance capacity of each core. So we're doubling number of cores per socket, and the capacity per core is increasing. So, you know, the real threat there from a revenue perspective is footprint compression, or our ability to maintain or increase the number of licenses we sell into our accounts. From a virtualization market fact perspective, a couple of points here. First point is that I think it's recognized that the reason customers want to use virtualization, essentially to save money by reducing the number of servers, sort of consolidating servers, or increasing the utilization of their servers in order to save money, I think primarily on electricity, but also space and administrative cost. And if you look at the virtualization market, I mentioned that, you know, IDC says it's growing at 27% per year. And if you look at the growth, x86, the Intel and AMD-based servers, is growing twice as fast as the RISC market. And if you look at the major virtualization players in the x86 market, VMware, you know, is well above everyone else with 80 to 85% market share. And so we'll talk about what our licensing is for VMware in this presentation. With that, let's go to page 5. In terms of competitive background, I think we have some advantages versus our two, you know, key competitors here, Microsoft and Oracle. You know, versus Microsoft, I think we have more to offer here, in the sense that Microsoft, first of all, doesn't play or doesn't run on RISC Unix boxes. They only run on x86 boxes, and it represents products that are priced based on capacity licensing per core or per socket. Represents less than 25% of their middleware portfolio, whereas for IBM, it represents more than half. And then from a granularity perspective, because we're licensing per core and Microsoft is licensing per socket, when you get into virtualization, customers essentially the minimum licensing requirement from Microsoft is one socket, and we're more granular. Compared to Oracle, I think the big deal here is that Oracle does not support VMware virtualization on x86, which as I said was the biggest player in the x86 virtualization market. Oracle prefers their proprietary Oracle VM virtualization software instead, and we do, as and we'll discuss in this presentation, support or have VMware as eligible in our offering. So we're, this is sort of a high-level comparison versus Microsoft and Oracle. We intend to develop some sales scenarios to sort of illustrate and help you or sellers with how to sell versus these two competitors and sort of draw out those advantages. So that's a to-do, a work in process. If we go to page six, before we get into a summary of PVU licensing and what is virtualization capacity licensing, I think it's important to set up on some key licensing principles. And from a PVU perspective, if you read the top of this chart, when we say the price scales to value, that simply means as the customer deploys on a bigger server, a server with more cores, and with respect to cores can be faster or slower cores, and that also plays to the scaling question. As the cores get faster, as the number of cores increases, the number of PVUs required, PVU licenses required, also increases, and vice versa. And so what we're licensing here to when we're talking about PVUs is the processor capacity available, and that's simply the number of cores times the PVUs per core. It's important from a licensing principle perspective to balance, precision with simplicity. So, we're cognizant that we don't want to increase the number of PVU tiers, beyond a manageable number, and other things along those lines in terms of keeping the licensing as simple as possible. And obviously, we need to make sure that we're priced competitively. Those are the key principles. Now, just to illustrate what, the point is on this page in terms of the processor capacity available licensing principle, let's just make a comparison to the bottom of this chart. Some customers ask us, or some reps ask us, why don't we charge based on processor usage or utilization? Why are we charging customers based on the capacity of a processor core? And the answer to that is, it ties back to the principle about keeping or balancing precision with simplicity. Measuring the utilization or usage of a for every middleware product in our portfolio, for a given processor is a huge task. And in addition, imagine the complexity we would face if we tried to convert from processor capacity available, which we've been licensing on for close to 10 years or more, convert from that to some sort of utilization pricing. We would have to measure where customers were in terms of how much of the processor they were utilizing, and some customers would be higher utilized than others. Some customers, if they were higher utilized, would be charged more. Customers lower utilization of a processor would be charged less. It would be almost complete chaos. So we're continuing, we intend to continue to price based on the processor capacity available, and that is the number of cores times the PVUs per core. Let's go to page seven. Quick, reminder for some, tutorial for others on what the differences are between a processor core and a processor socket. As you know, we require PVUs based on the number of processor cores. If you look in the middle of this page here, you can see in a dual-core processor type, you got two processor cores mounted on a single processor chip. That chip is mounted on a single processor socket. That socket is mounted on the motherboard of the server. And so to make the illustration complete, when you look at what we license, we're kind of in the same box on the right-hand side of this chart as Oracle. We require licenses for each processor core, in this case in the dual core picture, two cores times PVUs per core. And Microsoft on the bottom requires a license. Their minimum license requirement is a license for each socket. So they would require one license for the picture on the bottom of that dual core column. Go to page eight. Quick highlight on the PVU licensing structure. Before we, on the next page, talk about virtualization capacity licensing, let's do a little refresh on PVUs. First of all, we have for each middleware program a unique price per PVU. PVUs are transferable, by product across different systems, hardware servers. And again, once again, customers have to acquire PBUs based on the number and type of processor core. And there's a little excerpt here of a table illustrating what this looks like. So in the case of IBM Power 6 processor cores, these cores are the fastest in the industry. They require 120 PBU licenses per core. In the case of, at the bottom of this table, x86 dual or quad-core processor sockets, we require 50 PBUs per core. I think the key benefit from PBUs relative to what was previously per processor licensing is that we have more granularity. Essentially we took what was, a dollar bill and we said now we have 100 pennies, so one single per processor license is now 100 PBUs, is what, how we converted or transitioned from per processor to PBUs. That additional granularity allows us to provide a fair price for software value on multi-core technology. It allows us to continue to deliver software price performance improvements for new technologies relative to technologies being replaced, and it allows us or provides us with the granularity that we need for virtualization capacity licensing. So with that, let's go to page 9, sort of a high-level overview of what is virtualization capacity licensing. And to make the point, first, let's contrast virtualization capacity licensing to full capacity licensing, which is sort of the standard. If you don't have virtualization capacity licensing, you have full capacity licensing. Full capacity licensing means that a customer has to or must acquire licenses, PBU licenses, for all of the physical processor cores that are active on the server by product, for each product that is available on that server. Whereas with virtualization capacity licensing, customers acquire, follow our terms, customers acquire licenses for less than the total number of processor cores on the server. They acquire licenses for a subset of the server. Usually that's a partition or a virtual machine or an LPAR. We'll talk more about it. But essentially, that's the difference between full cap and virtualization capacity licensing. Now, the other point on this page is that virtualization capacity licensing is going to grow in importance, I think, in the x86 Intel AMD space, beginning in the first quarter, we expect, of 2009, when x86 GAs or brings to market their new processor types, which and they will begin selling exclusively quad core sockets. So they're going to effectively stop selling dual core sockets and start selling only quad core sockets. And what that means is on a full capacity basis, the minimum number of cores on their typical servers, on their high-volume servers, their servers with two sockets, is going to grow, from the dual-core two-socket servers, which have four cores per server, right, two sockets and two cores per socket, so two times two, four cores. It's going to grow to eight cores per server because those two-socket servers are going to have four cores per socket, per each socket. And what that means is, from a PVU licensing perspective, since the minimum number of cores is growing from 4 to 8, the number of PVUs will increase from 200 to 400 under full capacity licensing. And so I think it's important to have another tool in our toolkit here, which is virtualization capacity licensing. And if the customer is sort of questioning why is my licensing doubling, the answer is, well, it doesn't have to. It's only doubling because the capacity, performance capacity, is doubling. If you don't need all of that capacity, well, you should consider virtualization capacity licensing and license to a subset of that, higher capacity relative to the dual core world that dominates today. So growing in importance, I think, particularly with the new Intel processors that we expect in 1Q09, is the takeaway from page 9. Going to page 10, I mentioned we had an announcement on July 1st, and what this page does is highlight the key items that we announced. And to start, to make the contrast, let me just mention, prior to July 1st, 2008, where we were was we did not have virtualization capacity eligibility for VMware, which again is the leader on x86, and we were in an awkward situation with respect to our license metric tool, in that the tool had been temporarily suspended while we were going back to our development team, while our development team was working on simplifying the tool. All right, so now with our July 1st, 2008 announcement, we have made many of VMware technologies eligible for virtualization capacity licensing, and we have announced the availability of the new ILMT tool. That new ILMT tool is significantly easier to install. The business rules have been simplified, and we have gotten very positive feedback from the beta testing that we've done for this tool. So two big things that happened in July were, first, VMware eligibility, which positions us well versus Microsoft and Oracle on x86 platforms, and positions us well also for the pending event that I described in 1Q09, the new Intel processors. And then, of course, the availability of ILMT is a really big deal, and we'll talk more about that later in the presentation. Let's go to page 11, virtualization capacity licensing. This page sets up for a few examples of how virtualization capacity licensing works. We have a general example where I'll illustrate some of the key terms and concepts, and then we'll move into an example for VMware on x86 licensing, and then we'll go and talk a little bit about licensing and risk environments, specifically the benefits that you can get in terms of optimizing your servers on risk with IBM Power Systems shared pool technology. Before I get off this page, let me just contrast a little bit the rules we have for VMware, or really all what we intend for all x86 virtualization capacity licensing versus risk. And that is to say that for x86, the top priority in terms of licensing is to keep the licensing as simple as possible, because we expect high volumes of small servers, whereas in the risk environment, the licensing rules are designed to enable our customers to optimize the utilization of those assets. I'll talk more about those differences as we go through the examples. Let's start on page 12 with an example of full capacity licensing. So this is a very, very simple example here to illustrate the contrast once again. And if you, to read this chart, you start at the top in the rectangle that shows that we have one server. This example is an example that has one server, and there's 8 physical cores on the server. If you go into the middle of the page, you can see the software products on this server are MQ and WAS, and again, 8 physical cores. And then the licensing requirements are on the bottom of the page. So based on the example at the top, the licensing requirement in this full capacity example is PVU licenses for 8 cores for both MQ and WAS, which are on this server. Go to page 13, and we have a general, simple example of how licensing works on a server that has virtualization capacity. And reading from the top, we have one server here with 8 virtual cores and 8 physical cores. Again, we have MQ and WAS, but if you notice, MQ and WAS are in partition 1, whereas in partition 2, we have MQ only. Each of these two partitions, PAR stands for partitions, has four virtual cores, and you can see the physical cores, same as the FOCAP example, eight physical cores. Under this simple example, the requirement with virtualization capacity for MQ, which is in both partitions, is that you need to acquire licenses for four virtual cores for partition number one and four for partition number two, for a total of eight virtual cores, which is the same as would be required under full capacity, whereas for WAS, because WAS is in partition number one only, you would be required under virtualization capacity licensing to acquire licenses for four processor cores, right? And if in this, if you had a situation where the number of virtual cores exceeded the number of physical cores, you would the customer would would only be required to license for the number of physical cores, right? So the rule is that you have to license for the lower of the number of virtual cores or the number of physical cores. So that's a key benefit for our customers. To go to page 14, before we get into the VMware example, let me just level set with a couple of important definitions and licensing rules for VMware. And in terms of definitions, in a VMware environment, VMware refers to the virtual cores as virtual CPUs, or for short, vCPUs. And when we set up partitions in a VMware environment, VMware refers to that as a virtual machine, or a VM. And so in terms of the other definition that's important for, from a licensing perspective, is we have defined a requirement or an equivalency between a vCPU and a physical core, such that for one virtual CPU, you need to acquire, if the physical core requires 50 PBUs per core, then for one vCPU, you would need the same, 50 PBUs per core. So there's an equivalency between a vCPU and a physical core. And then if you understand that, the vCPU, the VM, and the equivalency between the vCPU and a physical core, the licensing rule is really very simple. It's simply that for each product, customers need to acquire PVUs for the number of vCPUs, or virtual cores, in each virtual machine, or VM, where the product is running. And that licensing rule is true for both a single server as well as a server cluster scenario. Server cluster is simply a group of servers clustered together. And in fact, the example that we have on the next page, let's turn to that now, is an example of a server cluster. So looking at page 15, again, let's start at the top. In this example, there are three servers, three physical servers. There's 12 virtual cores in total and 12 physical cores. And if you look at the middle of the page on the right side, you'll see the label physical environment. And in that physical environment, in that box, you see that there are three servers and a total of 12 cores, four cores per server. In the center of the middle, labeled virtualization environment, you see that the customer has set up six virtual machines, or VMs, and those virtual machines are drawing processor capacity from the physical environment. And in those virtual machines, the customer has established a number of virtual cores, or vCPUs, for each virtual machine. And then they've deployed middleware, in this example, MQ, into the first four VMs, but in VM number five and six, there's a non-IBM product running. And so the licensing rule, once again, is simply count up the number of vCPUs by product for each, for each VM that the product's running in. And so if you look to the bottom where you see, sort of the license, the answer, the licensing requirement, you can see that for MQ software, the number of vCPUs, or virtual cores, that we need to license for equals the number of vCPUs for the first four VMs, 1, 1, 2, and 4 virtual CPUs, or a total of 8 vCPUs is the virtualization capacity in this scenario. And that total of 8 is less than the full capacity of 12 for this server cluster, so the customer would need to license for 8 virtual cores. On page 16, this page sets up for the example on the following page, which is an example of an IBM Power Systems shared processor pool. Rather than go through the example on the next page, let me just sort of highlight what the benefit is for the customer, right? So there are a number of rules depending on the specific virtualization technology that the customer is interested in for IBM Power Systems, and that's true for any risk environment, you know, whether it be IBM Power Systems, Sun, or HP. There are specific licensing rules depending on the virtualization technology the customer is talking about. This page sort of highlights some of the rules around capped and uncapped partitions for IBM Power VM virtualization technology, as well as talks about shared processor pools and micro partitions. The example on the following page I'm not going to talk through is an example of a shared processor pool, but I do want to emphasize that the point of the shared processor pool is available to allow customers to set up partitions that have virtual capacity or the number of virtual cores in those partitions that actually exceed the capacity of the shared processor pool. But the rule that we've established is that the customer needs to has to license to the lower of the virtual cores in each of the partitions that are assigned to a shared processor pool or the capacity of the shared processor pool. And that allows customers to increase the utilization of that server environment, and that's a key benefit for our customers. But there are, you know, specific licensing rules customers need to be aware of, and we have specific charts that illustrate how those rules work. So let's go past page 17 and move to page 18. Really what I want you to understand are these this sort of licensing, virtualization capacity licensing requirements summary. Now, as I mentioned, most customers are already using virtualization technology. Some of them, you know, maybe not, you know, signed up for our virtualization capacity terms, right? So what we need you to understand is this summary here, and make your customers aware to the extent that, you know, you think they're interested already using virtualization capacity licensing, they need to be aware of these terms. And really, let me just read through them. First, they need to agree to our terms, and the terms are captured in a subcapacity attachment to the Passport Advantage Agreement, and you can look at page 28 for details. There are specific virtualization capacity license counting rules that I mentioned that are available for each virtualization technology or for any virtualization technology that's eligible, I'll take you through later, a specific web page that has that has available, you know, to you what those rules are. There are, not every product is yet eligible for subcapacity licensing, so we have a list of products that are eligible, subcapacity part numbers that you know, accompany those products. We have a list of eligible virtualization technologies. Not every technology is eligible. Prior to July 1, for example, VMware was not eligible. We have a list of eligible processor technologies. And, of course, customers are required to use the IBM license metric tool. Now, for more on the tool, let's go to page 19. I do want to talk about that since we did announce the availability of the new tool on July 1st. So on page 19, it's important to understand that customers, even though the tool was not available, customers, you know, who signed up for virtualization capacity licensing had agreed that they would begin using the tool once it became available. And the rule is that customers have until November 30th of this year to install and begin using ILMT. ILMT is a no-charge product that's available to all of our customers. And, in fact, we recommend it, what we recommend it for, you know, all PVU full cap environments, full capacity environments. So recommended for full cap. It's mandatory or required for virtualization capacity environments in general, but there are a couple of exceptions. And the exceptions are listed here. I think the key ones, let me mention, are, first of all, if a technology is eligible but not yet supported by the tool. That's the case for VMware, by the way. VMware will not be supported by the tool until the end of June 2009 is what we said in our announcement. So if the if the virtualization technology is eligible but not supported by the tool, well, obviously that's an exception. If the enterprise has fewer than 1,000 employees and contractors worldwide, that's also an exception. And there, you can read here, there are two other exceptions. I want to mention, though, that if the customer qualifies for one of these exceptions, it doesn't, you know, they're not off the hook from a tracking perspective, right? They still need to count manually, and we have a simple Excel template, Microsoft Excel template, that's available for manual tracking. So the customer, you know, again, for any of these exceptions, we recommend that they use ILMT, but if they have some other method, that's fine, but they still need to track manually using this template. And in any case, whether they're using ILMT or the manual calculation method, they need to maintain records each quarter, so reports that come out of ILMT. They don't need to send them to IBM. They just need to maintain them on site, either the report that comes out of ILMT or the manual Excel template. They have to update that at least once a quarter and maintain those reports for 2 years. So with that, let's go to page 20, selling the value of virtualization capacity. This page has two sections, new license sales and license conversions. Really, the key point on new license sales is that, you know, we don't want to sell customers more than the capacity they need, right? We don't want to give them, we want to avoid excess license entitlements, because if we sell customers more than the entitlements they need, if we sell them excess entitlements, then, you know, that's going to mean it's going to be harder to sell them new license sales in the following year. So let's avoid excess license entitlements at high discounts. Let's sell virtualization capacity licenses instead when possible for new license sales. And then for license conversions, I think, you know, the important point here is that we want to manage conversions carefully. So if you have a situation where a customer has acquired full capacity licenses in the past at high discounts, I think, you know, the objective here would be to sort of bundle the conversion with new license sales at a lower discount. There are specific rules in terms of eligibility for conversion listed on page 32. So IBM reps can authorize conversions, but there are rules that you need to follow on page 32. All right, let's go to page 21. Sort of the last page before I take you through website navigation. And let me just mention, in terms of next steps, the most important one, we think, is to raise awareness, communication, improve the training for both IBM sales reps and business partners. I mentioned that we're working on sales scenarios. We'll be making that available. We're also planning to work on MP3 voice files to support the already, you know, quite extensive collateral that we have available on our SubCap website. I'll take you through that on the next page. And then other next steps here in terms of broadening the offering, you know, we're intending to add or make eligible more products and more virtualization technologies. So before I open up for Q&A, let me talk through page 22 and just tell you that there is a main virtualization capacity website page for you know, our sales reps, you know, that is listed here, the link at the top, and that there's a similar page available for customers, the website that's listed next to external site at the top of page 22, and that the construct and the collateral available is identical in the middle of this page for both our sales reps and our customers. Really, the difference is at the bottom of this page, where for our sales reps, we have this sales training that I'm talking through, as well as additional Q&A and rules around license conversions. Now, in both cases, I did want to mention that I think what the most important part of the collateral, in addition to, you know, what's available at a high level on the main page, is listed under items 2 and 3 in the middle of this page, labeled internal, external, essentials, and that is where you can find the current subcapacity licensing attachment, as well as the specific virtualization capacity license counting rules that I mentioned earlier that become important depending on the virtualization technology your customer is looking to use. So this is sort of a map of the collateral we have available on these two key website pages that are you have links to at the top. But with that, Matt, if you could open up for Q&A, I'd appreciate it.
And for our phone audience, if you do have a question or comment at this time, you may signal by pressing star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Once again, that's star followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone at this time. We do ask those participants who are using speakerphones to please make sure that your mute function is turned off so that your signal can reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question or comment at this time. Our first question today will come from Shelley Reno.
Oh, just wanted to confirm that, for example, VMware ESX 3.0 or 3.5 is not going to be supported until, what you're saying, the end of first half 2009, so that customers use a manual count. And you said they have to maintain it. Do they send it back into IBM, or they just maintain it if we come and ask them for it?
Thanks for that question, Shelley. So you're correct. VMware ESX 3.0, 3.5 is eligible, but the ILMT tool doesn't support it and won't support it until the end of, really, June 2009.
Right.
So in the meantime, they don't need to send anything to IBM. They just need to maintain the manual calculation spreadsheet template that we have available on our websites. In the event of an audit, they need to show the auditors, right, that they have been maintaining this. They have the spreadsheet updated, you know, at least once per quarter for and available for the last 2 years.
And where is that template? It's downloadable off of one of these sites?
Yeah, if you go to the site that I mentioned from page 22.
Yep, I'm there.
That has the virtualization license counting rules.
Okay.
You should see the template on the right-hand nav bar available there.
So that's available to customers. Okay. So we just sold something in Q2. We need to go back to them and tell them about this template that they need to start to maintain because they are using, you know, the VMware 3.5 or 3.0.
Yes, that's correct, Shelley. And I'd be interested, you know, if you hear feedback on the template. You know, we try to make it as simple as possible for what the customer thinks.
So I have one other question, if I can ask it now. Customer asked us if they have dynamically assigned process virtual CPUs so that in the event that it needs more, if they go over that or require that dynamic CPU for 5 minutes, they have to pay an additional processor value unit, or they have to pay whatever the appropriate.
That's right. I mean, the basic concept, you know, for our capacity-based licensing is that customers need to plan for and acquire in advance licenses for the maximum or peak processor capacity that's going to be available, even if it's only for, as you say, 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question will come from Tim O'Shea.
My question was answered. I apologize.
Our next question will come from Bill Farmer.
Yes, good morning. I have a quick question here. I having just gone through an audit at one of my customers, I'm keen on keeping my customers out of trouble. Do you guys plan on having some sort of like a DVD available for customers that they can just pop in their PC and sort of get a walkthrough on how this works?
Bill, we do have a customer education deck that's available on that external page, and we do intend to take not only that but other the individual virtualization technology license counting rules sections, and put that onto a DVD or MP3 type file for that purpose. And I'm glad you mentioned, Bill, the point about keeping your customers out of trouble. That's a very important point that I just want to reiterate, for our sellers to begin to have these discussions around virtualization capacity licensing terms so that, there aren't any unpleasant surprises, in the event of an audit.
Yeah, it gets really ugly. I mean, when your customer comes back and says, well, we never really understood that, it just kind of, then it gets into a, he said, she said kind of thing. The other thing that I wanted to ask about was this tool, the ILMT tool. Does this tool tell the customer, I'm not a very technical person, but does it tell them, how many servers they have in their enterprise and how many cores they have per server and all that? Can they use this tool to kind of help them get their arms around what they've actually got out there? Because most of the large customers probably don't even know.
Yes, the tool does have a report that tells them the number of servers as well as the number of partitions, if you will, or virtual machines, LPARs, whatever the term is.
Okay.
And the number of cores that's in those partitions on those servers, as well as the PVUs that are required, for those cores.
Ah, great. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, I should mention, since you asked, that this ILMT tool does all that, does have that report, but we also have a commercial product, that we're working on that's going to have even more functionality that, we hope our customers find useful, and we'll be communicating, more about that as that product, becomes available.
Yeah, I think it's going to become more important to us as salespeople to tune into this stuff because it could get kind of messy. The other question, I have just a couple more if we have time. Do we have any statistics on the overhead that created by the ILMT tool? I mean, I'm assuming you fire it up and it runs and then it shuts down and creates a report.
Yeah, Steve, Steve's on the phone with me. Do you know the answer to that one, Steve?
Not,
really technical on the overhead. I don't think it's significant, but.
Hey, Bill, this is Steve Salivari. It's a much lighter weight tool than the prior ITLCM tool. It does require a dedicated server or partition to run the, I guess what you'd call the mothership, and then you deploy agents that are like 1 meg of RAM in each of the partitions that you want to, to report on or monitor. So the agent is always in memory as long as the partition is powered up, and then it periodically. So it's scanning about every 30 minutes, but then when the network traffic is low, then it will report back to the ILMT server, what the results are. So those specs are in the announcement letter, and there's also more detail on the ILMT customer briefing in terms of the specific requirements.
Okay. And I only have one more question. Have you guys considered doing, say, monthly or maybe even biweekly conference calls for for customers. In other words, like every other Friday, there's a call-in number where you can sit down with a customer and go through this, or do you want to just, are you just going to do it on a one-by-one basis?
Well, we haven't considered that, but I think it's a suggestion we need to consider. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I know my customers, and if we just give them a bunch of information, they'll just throw it on their desk. And but like I said, I'm sensitive to this because I just went through an audit, and I don't want to do that again.
I think the point that you're making, right, is the point that I kind of started out with, which is, and the point we closed on, which is, we do need to have our sales reps get their heads around, the virtualization capacity offering. Specifically the, key requirements and, some part of the virtualization rules, at least the simpler ones. And then, our intention is to, as I mentioned, create some of those MP3 files to, for customers to listen to, with sales teams. We also intend to, make this education, just more broadly available through the IBM, continuing education program for sales reps. So, the whole focus on education, I think, needs to be beefed up, is your point. Now, we have, participated and supported in specific customer, discussions, but, there's only a handful of us here at, headquarters. We can't possibly, do that for all the customers, so we really need the sales reps to get their heads around this.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks, guys. Great job.
And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it is star one if you have a question or comment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing star two. Our next question will come from Darren Rich.
Hi, thanks for the good presentation today. I work in on a Sistral across software sales in the entire region, and I will say that the subject of subcapacity or now virtualization capacity is still a very confusing issue for sales reps, although I think it's getting better and certainly very confusing for our customers. But I guess I would also say that while people are getting more educated on the concept, it's only going to get more complex with the additional use of VMware and things like micro partitioning on power and so forth. And so what I'm wondering is, have we considered, or is it even feasible or possible to create some type of licensing tool that could be made available to first to our sales reps and then maybe even put out on the web where, there's two ways to approach something like this, right? One way is to try to educate folks so they can really calculate it on their own. The other is to create some type of tool where they can go in and choose what technology they're using, what the server, what virtualization technology, and just make choices from pull downs and to then eventually spit out the number of processor cores they need to license.
So I think it's a good question, Darren. Thank you. Steve, let me just ask you, Steve, if the customer, and I know this question is not, there's two types of scenarios right there. One is the customer already has the ILMT tool installed, and I'm just wondering, and I don't know, question to Steve, whether once you have the tool installed, whether you can, create some, scenarios and do some, what-if scenarios to figure out how many licenses you need. But then I think the other scenario or situation Darren is referring to is if a customer doesn't yet have the tool installed, how do they plan for the number of licenses that they require?
Yeah,
right?
That's it. It's the latter. And even before we put it in the customer's hands, put it in the hands of IBM salesperson to use.
I think on the latter point then, Darren, what we have today is the chart decks that are available for each virtualization technology, and there are scenarios, right? So you can, for dynamic, partitioning on System P or some other technology, you can find the chart deck for that vendor and say, okay, how does this work? Follow the examples and figure it out, albeit, maybe it's not as slick as what you're describing. So I think what you're describing is some sort of little calculator tool One does not exist today. I think it's something we need to think about. But today it's go to the charts. You know, we'll have voice to support those charts and, you know, sort of understand how the license counting rules work for the technology that you're thinking about.
Or, you know, fail that until something like that becomes available. If there's just one place we can go to for questions, you know, where we can say, okay, here's a situation. This is what I'm trying to license. And
hey, Darren, this is Steve Salivari. I want to make sure that you and everyone else knows that we do have a PVU calculator tool and a guide to determine your processor. Those are out there and can be helpful in both full and subcapacity, you know, situations. But you're right. We don't have a tool that takes it to the next step that would then plug in a VMware, you know, scenario that they would, you know, spit out the right answers.
Yeah, I mean, that.
You know, the first line of defense is really the TechLine team. You know, they're the ones that, you know, understand the configurations and technologies, and then, you know, they come to us, you know, if there's a question about how to count, you know, in one of those environments, and then we, you know, we make sure that we've addressed that in our collateral, and if we haven't, then we'll, you know, make sure we clarify that.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Aaron Krause.
Hi, I think my one question was answered around the x86 Intel environment with VMware still applying for subcapacity, but just that the ILMT tool is not available to measure it. Is that correct?
That's correct, Eric.
Yeah, it's Aaron. And my other question, which may be outside the scope of this call, but I've seen a number of IBM software proposals where the same sizing for software on a x86 or Intel environment is less expensive to the customer than on a System P environment. I certainly understand the inherent advantages of a System P server and all that goes with it over an Intel server, but wondering if you could comment on why our software is so much more expensive for a System P over an Intel environment, given the same sizing.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not looking at the specific sizing you're talking about, but, you know, when we set our PVU requirements, you know, for System P, you know, we believe that the PVU requirement is actually a super value for example, Power 6, the latest technology, relative to Power 5, as well as, you know, relative to x86 platforms. So, you know, I guess there can be situations where, you know, it's not apparent, and then, you know, we need to sell through that. But, you know, we think the PVU requirement, I think if you're referring to Power 6 at 120 PVUs per core, is just a, you know, super value. There were a lot of people here at headquarters that wanted to, you know, have that requirement even higher.
Yeah, I'm not discounting the value. I'm just trying to understand why the, in some cases, large disparity between a price on a System P versus a System X.
Yeah, again, I'm not, you know, I guess you're referring to a tech line sizing?
Yeah. I mean, that could be one scenario. I've seen multiple scenarios where our software costs quite a bit more on a System P versus a System X, given somewhat similar components to support the software. Or cores, if you will, right?
If you take the number of cores times the PVUs per core, that because I would expect that TechLine would come back and say, you know, for x86, you know, you need more cores, fewer PVUs per core, but more cores, such that, you know, the sizing should come out to approximately, you know, the same as what it would come out to for Power 6, where I would expect you need fewer cores but more PVUs per core, right? So the performance capacity, you know, between the two technologies is different per core. So I guess, you know, if there's a specific, you know, scenario that, you know, you want to forward, you know, offline, you know, we can talk about it after the call. I'd be interested. But it should, you know, it's designed such that, you know, there isn't, you know, this situation that you're describing.
Okay.
I mean, you know, one of the things, right, that you need to keep in mind, right, is we, you know, it depends, right? Every customer situation is going to be different. And And, you know, we create a structure, you know, the PVU structure, you know, to meet, you know, or provide a fair price for value for most, you know, as a starting point for most of the situations. You know, but depending on the middleware, depending on the deployment, depending on, you know, yada, 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 a lot of different things, you know, you may need to, you know, take things into consideration and sell through that, right? So it's not going to, the structure is not going to, you know, be perfect across all platforms, across all customer situations. Right? The only way to get there is to create multiple, you know, PVU tables, you know, by, you know, more detail, more complexity, and we don't want to do that.
So where would I forward this scenario?
Well, this is Carlos Belak. You can forward it to me. B-E-L-A-K.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Bob Alechner.
Hey, Carlos. Real quick question for you. How would you, for lack of a better term, intelligently answer why some products are sub-capacity eligible or virtualization capacity eligible and some are not? I had that asked to me by both the client team and the client, because we have two products with an account that they want to go on sub-capacity and one of them is not eligible. What's the reasoning, rhyme or reason, why some are and some aren't?
You know, to be honest, Bob, I'd have a hard time answering that question. I would say that, you know, our intention eventually to make all of our PVU products eligible for subcap, but, you know, it's taking us a while to get there. In the meantime, Bob, you know, frankly, I would, you know, contact the brand pricer and ask if, you know, a special bid opportunity is available for that product.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Dave Komorowski.
Good presentation. Thank you. The question I have is dealing with a customer who signed a subcap license a few years ago. With the new changes, do they need to sign a new agreement, or does that apply to these new products that were recently added?
Well, thanks for that question, Dave. So the situation is this. We have modified the terms, you know, for things like, you know, originally we said the customers had to send reports to IBM, you know, once a quarter, and there are many other terms like that, or a few other terms like that, that we modified, right? And we now say customers don't have to send anything to IBM, just maintain, you know, those reports on site, you know, in the event of an audit. And so what we're in the process of doing is creating a new subcapacity attachment, right? And that attachment we expect is going to be available by the end of August, maybe sooner. And once that attachment becomes available, we're going to send a letter to all existing, all customers who have, you know, signed up for what was subcapacity licensing terms, notifying those customers that the new that there's a new attachment, right, that contains the new terms. And, you know, unless they contact us within 90 days, you know, they're accepting those new terms. So we're updating the attachment. It'll be available, you know, by the end of August, and we're going to notify existing customers via a letter advising them that they have 90 days, you know, that they're going to be subject to the new terms unless they, you know, object within 90 days.
And if they make an acquisition before that letter is sent out, it falls under the old terms and conditions of the old attachment. They can operate underneath that.
It does. You know, we're in a bit of a complex situation because the existing attachment has been superseded by letters we sent to customers in April and November of 2007, as well as the announcement we just made, right?
Okay.
So it's a kind of a complicated, you know, another awkward situation that we're in. We do have a draft of the attachment, but it's only available for English, you know, contracts, right, that we could use to sort of cut through the complexity that we have talking about the existing attachment and the two letters that we issued in 2007 and the announcement in July. So we can do that, can just advise customers that the existing attachment has been superseded by these two letters and the July announcement. And, you know, we are trying as fast as we can to get away from this awkward situation by putting the new attachment in place just as soon as we can, and then, you know, sort of completing this transition with this final notification letter that I mentioned that's going to go out just as soon as we get the attachment posted on our websites.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Our next question will come from David Eves.
Carlos, this is David Eves. This is a very complex topic, and you did an excellent job. I appreciate it. Two short questions. My mission is to work with business partners. Clearly, we need to educate them also. Is there plans to have a similar conference call that we can invite partners to?
We don't have a concrete timetable for that, but you know we are well aware that we need to reach out to business partners as well, David.
Carlos, this is Steve. Actually, we do have a date. We just can't point you yet to the link yet, and we'll post that. But the date is the August 28th at 11 Eastern at the Cross Brand. Roger, I'm forgetting the name of the. It's a monthly call with partners.
Okay.
So that we'll be posting that up on the website.
It's a Think Thursday call. It's the regularly scheduled call. We will be the August agenda.
Excellent. One other quick question. On slide 31 at the bottom, it uses the term AYCE true-up should be based on PVUs. What does AYCE stand for?
All you can eat. All right. So in certain selected large enterprise multi-year ELA contracts, we sometimes have a term that called all you can eat.
I understand. Thank you.
Our next question will come from David Jasinski.
Hi, guys. I have a couple questions. The first thing, specifically with the new tool in the Power Architecture, is there anything that it's not going to capture as far as dynamic usage, specifically around dynamic LPARs and whatnot? If someone changes their dynamic LPAR on the fly, will the tool capture that?
Yes.
Okay. And then the second thing is I saw some ordering information in there, and it's always frustrating to get a customer to do a $0 PO. Is there any way we can order the tool on the customer's behalf?
Steve, can you answer that one?
I will explore that. That's a good question. We'll get that posted. Can you give me the spelling of your name, David?
J-A-S-I-N-S-K-I.
S-K-I. Okay. I'll get back to you specifically on that, and we'll post that up on the website to see what we can do there.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Our next question will come from Ron Egg.
Yeah, good afternoon, Ron. I have a question about the ILMT tool and compared to Tifly Large Compliance Manager. Is it the same technology? If so, it'd be easy. If not, how do we deal with that? Customers that already have a Large Compliance Manager and or want Large Compliance Manager.
Hi, Ron. This is Steve Salaveria again. The technology on the for the agent is somewhat, you know, is based on the same kernel that's been updated for the, you know, the latest virtualization technology counting rules that we've, you know, we've updated. The server technology has been improved greatly. The tool is using now eWAS on the server instead of the full WAS product, so it makes it a smaller footprint. They've updated the GUI. They've also incorporated, this is really the first step toward incorporating the overall Tivoli Asset Management family into the Maximo technology. So, when Tivoli announces updates to their asset management family, this tool will be integrated with the overall direction that they're going with that asset management technology.
So it's a good upsell opportunity.
Yeah, the old ITLCM required two server footprints or two partitions, and so we're going down to one server, you know, a single partition. They don't have to have a runtime image now.
Then I have one last question. Who's expected to implement the ILMT tool?
The customer's expected to implement it, and we are providing a no-charge webcast training on August 12th. that'll be available for replay to customers to guide, you know, guide them through step-by-step the install and installation and deployment process. The customers are also expected to, you know, provide the server and the network infrastructure and the, you know, their resources to install it. And if customers don't want to dedicate that, or, you know, they can, you know, purchase services from Tivoli Services if they need help on installing the tool.
Okay, thanks very much.
And our next question will come from Michael Hunt.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you. Good morning. And a good call. Very difficult subject, as a number of people have mentioned already. But it's definitely helpful. I don't know if it's more of a question or maybe it's a comment or even just your thoughts on this in regards to what I'm going to ask. I'm looking at the eligible list of products that I think the most current update on that is July 1st.
Right.
And so let me state my comment. I'm looking at this, and I'm just wondering if it's maybe the nature of the product. I represent actually Tivoli here in Canada, and the entire stack or pillars from a Tivoli standpoint. But when I look at this eligible list, so right now I see basically six products, specifically around the IT CAM for applications. But when you look through the list, there's a host of, you know, DB2, Lotus, especially WebSphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, and again, this is probably more so from a sanity check, is there something, and part of my question has already been answered based on a previous caller who had asked about, in some cases, we need to go to the brand to, I'm going to be using a special bid. But when I look at this and the fact that from a Tivoli standpoint, you see six discrete products, if you want to call it, with part numbers, as opposed to the others that may have 20 or 25. Is the Tivoli list going to be growing over time, or is it because of the nature of the Tivoli product in question as opposed to the others that subcapacity or this virtualization capacity is not as available as the other product lines, software product lines? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I would answer it this way. I would say that, you know, we, as I mentioned, right, with the announcement in July, right, support for VMware, you know, the pending event that I talked about for Intel coming,
right,
the ILMT tool now being available, I think we're in a much better position from an offering perspective to use this offering, you know, to win deals. And I think that the brands are going to add more products to this list, and we're working, you know, specifically with the Tivoli team. You know, there's support to put Tivoli products. I mean, there's no reason why they can't be added. So there's support to put the products into the offering, but that needs to work its course. And, you know, if you as a salesperson think that that's important, you know, you should, you know, make that clear to, you know, your management chain.
Right, right. I got you. And I just want to end with, that makes a lot of sense, and thank you for that. And why I brought this up is just to give you a sense or even put some rationale around this or even a kind of box us in a bit. I mean, this 300, last count was something like 376 Tivoli products, part number products, right? I think another 55 in the PA portfolio alone. Meanwhile, I'm looking at this and I see six.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. All right, thank you, guys. Good job.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Steve Carlson.
Hi, Carlos. Keith Carlson here from the Power Systems Competitive Project Office. Before I get to my question, I have an offer of assistance for, I believe it was Aaron, who talked about pricing on X versus Power Systems processors. Now, Carlos, if Aaron comes to you, you can also offer to him that Michael and I will help him out building that equivalency and help him to demonstrate to his clients that our software on Power can be a lot less expensive than competitor solutions. And that goes out to all the other callers or all the other listeners on today's call as well.
But can you just say your last name again, Keith? I think.
Sure. It's Keith Carlson, Carlsen.
Thanks, Keith.
All right. And my question for you, Carlos and Steve, is regarding the partition mobility capabilities like vMotion for VMware and Live Partition Mobility for the Power Systems. How does the virtualization licensing apply to customers using those capabilities?
Well, for a partition mobility, you know, that became available with the announcements from Power Systems last year, we announced a statement of direction that, you know, those that technology would be eligible within our virtualization capacity offering sometime later this year. So it's not yet eligible. Now, it doesn't mean we, you know, can't look at it under, you know, a special bid situation, but not yet, you know, formally eligible. Whereas under VMware, we do support the, or I should say it's eligible, the vMotion event within a server cluster. Right, and I think that the key difference here is that, you know, in the x86 space, it's really characterized by lots of, you know, small servers clustered together, you know, sort of a scale-out model, whereas in the power system space, lots of times it's a large system, you know, with lots of cores, and the technology is very robust, and our licensing rules allow customers to optimize or, you know, and bring the utilization of that asset up to a very high level, which is not available, you know, that optimization concept in the VMware x86 licensing space.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Our next question will come from Richard Wasserman.
Hi, this is Rich Wasserman. I'm the America sales leader for the TLCM product, and I just wanted to make a comment that these subcap rules and the requirement for LMT actually provide a very good upsell or alternative sale of LCM for a specific reason. If you're very concerned about your customers, and we heard a comment earlier about one of the reps who went through, their customer went through an audit, the LMT, while it's a great tool, is going to provide reports that have to be stored. For a customer to determine whether or not proactively they're in compliance will require manual effort of comparing against entitlements. If they deploy LCM, they can set that up to proactively manage compliance to ensure that they're not out of compliance when we come in to do an audit and request to view those reports. So it is an alternative or an upsell opportunity that provides the customer additional value. And as was mentioned earlier, the next generation of the tool will fully encompass the LMT technology, which any LCM customers will be entitled to. And as well, you should be aware that LMT and LCM are not compatible to run on the same systems. So there is a fourth fee product that drives revenue that can provide the customer additional value to help them ensure proactively that they don't become out of compliance that's available to you, and I wanted to just make that point.
Thanks, Richard. We agree. You know that, again, the ILMT tool, which is no charge, is recommended for all PVU environments, required for most virtualization capacity environments. And there is a commercial tool that, you know, is available now, will become available once a fixed pack comes out later this year to enable customers to use that commercial tool and be, you know, following our licensing rules. And that commercial tool has more functionality, and we'll be talking more about that as we go. But it's an upsell opportunity.
Thanks.
And there are no further questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your participation on the call and the Q&A. And you know, please take a look at our websites and have those discussions with your customers. Thank you.
And that does conclude today's teleconference. We'd like to thank everyone for their participation and wish everyone a great day.